morning. It's 6:39 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us is Alex Andrade. He is our state representative for District 2, and it is the first week of session. And pretty much, I think, every year that he has been in office when we've had session, we try to have him on every Friday to give us a recap of what's going on in the legislature in Tallahassee. Alex, welcome back, and for your final session.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Yeah. Last one, last ride.
I will tell you, as I get older, one of the things I notice happens more with me is I think about beginnings and endings and not just middles of things. And so whenever this may sound morbid, but you'll understand what I'm getting at. I have an older dog and a younger dog. And when I'm petting the older dog, I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to be able to pet her forever. That's coming. And then I think, well, even for the younger dog, that's coming. And so that sense of time shortening to be the awareness of the whole scope of something. And I just wonder, now that it's in your eighth and final year as a legislator, if you have any of that sense, if you're already thinking about the ending and it being over, or if you're just kind of like, oh, man, there's so much work to be done with my committee right now.
It's a combination. It depends on the day. But, I mean, I'm at the beginning stage of a different part of life, right? Like, I have a six-month-old at home and a three-year-old at home.
Yeah.
And so, when folks talk to me about it, and ask me, like, what are you going to do next? You going to run for something else? And no. I want to go appreciate the time I have, with my two little girls and my wife. So, sure. There's some days where it's like, man, I wish I could have gotten something more done.
Yeah.
Right. But there's, I'm in a great position right now to get some really exciting things done. And I'm making significant progress on some really exciting things as the chair of the healthcare budget committee. When my time is up over here, there's gonna be no like somberness, just because it means I get to be home every single morning with my wife and my two daughters.
Yeah, I mean, next March, because it'd be a later start because of not being an election year, but basically next March, you will both not be the attorney for Milton and also not have to go to Tallahassee, which I got to imagine is going to give you a lot of time to catch up on Netflix.
my cortisol levels will plummet.
Hey, let's talk about healthcare stuff for just a second. It's a story maybe people have not heard yet, but because of changes taking place at the federal government level and some of the funding changes, especially around Obamacare and the subsidies, it winds up that some Floridians, actually a number of Floridians who have HIV, are going to lose their access to free drugs to treat their disease, right?
Yeah, there was some news yesterday out of the Tampa Bay Times and the Tallahassee Democrat about we have an HIV program through the Department of Health. Right now, Floridians who are at 400% of the poverty level who have HIV can qualify for free subsidized HIV drugs, prevention drugs that allow HIV to be more manageable. Unfortunately, because of some changes to the Obamacare subsidies at the federal level, the state of Florida is losing out on $120 million to provide these drugs. I had to like run down the details of it this week just to make sure I was fully aware of what was going on. But the Department of Health is modifying that 400% poverty level qualification down to, I think, about 130% of the poverty level. It's always unfortunate when you see a program like that kind of be changed and people who, were depending on it losing it, but it's a situation where we don't have $120 million to pick up on this federal program. So it's a situation where, you have this interaction between the federal government and the state, and, when the federal government decides to pull back, the state doesn't have the funds necessarily to fill that gap.
Yeah.
It's not the only program like that, but it's the most recent one. And, it represents $120 million that we'd have to find. And when you think about $120 million for, 10,000 people in the Florida population who might lose it, it gets difficult to say that that's the best use of those dollars. And we just, right now, unless we make significant cuts to other programs, we don't have $120 million to move to that program.
There's 10,000 people in Florida that are HIV positive? That are in this.
There's
far more than that, right? But I mean, that are in this particular
far
problem
more.
Set.
Well, there's 10,000 people who were between 130 and 400% poverty level who were getting these drugs for your subsidized from Department of Health. There's far more people in Florida with HIV, but that's the population that we're talking about. These folks that were in this program within those two qualifications.
Got it. Very good. I mean, very terrible, but I mean, you know, wow. We also, you guys, yesterday, the House as a body passed the lowering of the gun age bill to 18 again for long, you know, rifles and shotguns. That was the post-Parkland bill that made it 21 for everybody. Okay, good. I support this completely. Constitutionally, I support this. But is there yet again any chance this is going to go anywhere in the Senate?
There's always a chance. Andrew, there's always a chance, but no, there's no companion bill in the Senate. So barring some amendment to a bill vehicle in the Senate or some type of amendment on the floor, you know, towards the end of session on the Senate side, no, there's not a traditional chance in the sense that there's, you know, two bills that are similar enough that will go through session on both sides.
You know, it's kind of interesting as I was thinking about Senator Albritton's comments about you know, the purpose of the Senate is to slow things down and make bad judgments not happen quickly and, you know, cool the saucer of legislation and all the stuff, which I agree with. It's interesting because the Senate has been the roadblock to removing this restriction and allowing people 18, 19, and 20 to buy long guns for, you know, personal defense or whatever. But it was this, which, you know, I understand the argument, but it was also the Senate that acted quickly post-Parkland to put in the restriction. You might make the case that it was the rapidity of the Parkland bill that got us into the problem we were trying to undo for the last several years.
Yeah, no, I mean, and to that point and to pretty much all the points, I think Ben Albritton's speech was great. It was remarkably self-aware, right?
Yeah.
No politician wants to talk about themselves in that way necessarily. At least not in front of an electorate, right? You know, everybody wants things done fast. Everybody wants to, like, talk with their king for a day.
Yeah.
The Senate has a specific role. And so it was remarkably self-aware to talk about the Senate that way. And it does have a role, you know, but no, yeah, to your point, sometimes, you know, we act too fast, too efficiently, and, you know, things that, you know, are bad are bad. But at the same time, the majority of Floridians disagree with reducing the age back to 18, right? Like me, conservative Republican, I want the age reduced back to 18. I want a broader discussion about the age of majority if we're going to treat 18, 19, 20-year-olds like lesser than adults. But at the same time, the majority of Floridians disagree with me. And I have to acknowledge that at the very least, while at the same time, you know, standing by my own principles that I believe are based in the Constitution. And there's actually a circuit split in the United States. We have I think it's the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and then the 11th Circuit ours that upheld our state law. The Fifth Circuit said that, you know, age restrictions are unconstitutional. So the Supreme Court at some point might weigh in and decide whether or not we can discriminate against 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
And by the way, that's one of the things I've always kind of admired about you is you have a very good, I think, awareness of even your own duty to represent something you don't necessarily agree with, but which you know your constituents very much want, that obligation to be a representative as opposed to being, you know, your own man. And I think that's an important point to make as well. And I know you and I both appreciate Senator Albritton's just reminder of, you know, the design was gridlock. Like, the design was inefficiency. You know, government isn't supposed to operate very quickly except under certain very limited circumstances. So I love that. I love hearing a politician actually explain that. E-Verify, there was a bill that you guys passed on this, right?
There was. We passed the E-Verify bill off the floor yesterday as well that essentially would apply to all businesses. So all businesses would have to run new hires through E-Verify to you know, verify immigration status. Again, that was another one that was, you know, popular on the House side. Unclear what's going to happen in the Senate. But it's kind of a no-brainer, right? If you're a conservative Republican coming up through, you know, like in our state right now, where we on the House side are far more responsive, obviously, to our primary voters that we see every 2 years. And so we passed that one. But again, going back to Senator Albritton's point, unclear what the Senate's going to do about it.
You know, I'm going to ask you an awkward question because the E-Verify move makes it so that businesses less than 25 people have to do E-Verify, whereas now it's only over 25. And so the principle is we want to make sure that we catch everybody who's illegal, or we prevent everybody who's illegally here or undocumented here from, you know, getting a job, because that's something that we're trying to prevent in its entirety. I think a savvy Democrat might say, okay, you want to allow background checks to prevent criminals from getting guns at a gun store, but you don't want to have to run background checks for private individuals or at, you know, gun shows or something like that, let's say. Isn't the same principle there that if it's good enough to make small businesses have to do this with small hires, why don't we have to make small gun purchasers do this with small gun sales?
Well, no, I'm perfectly fine with background checks for firearm purchases. I mean, I think that's been pretty standard across the board. But the distinction between the right to purchase a firearm and the right to hire an illegal immigrant are two very different distinctions, right? Like,
oh, sure,
employers don't have a right to hire an illegal immigrant, whereas Americans do have the right to possess and own firearms.
Well, they have the right to hire a legal, you know, somebody who's here legally. So that's, I think that's the parallel. But no, I'm glad you say that, because I feel the press of that same question that, you know, if we believe in background checks for gun purchases, we should believe in background checks for gun purchases. And that's, you know, that's kind of what I was curious what your take on that would be. Civil liability for loss of a child when you're pregnant. This is an interesting one. You also passed that yesterday.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, you know, it got the same treatment from the minority party as like any abortion bill normally does. But essentially, I mean, right now in Florida, the dynamic is if you're a pregnant mother in a car driving to the hospital, you get into a car accident, you cannot sue the drunk driver that hits you for the loss of life of that child. Whereas if you are driving home from the hospital.
We currently don't have that? Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Go on.
Whereas, like, you're driving home from the hospital after giving birth to your child, you can sue that drunk driver for the loss of your child.
Right.
So the premise of the bill is simply, we're going to acknowledge the loss of life of that unborn child and allow for civil liability for anyone that causes the loss of that life. But it got the same treatment as most abortion bills do, which I think is kind of sad. But it passed. I was obviously very proud to vote for that one as well. And so, you know, that one's going to get sent over to the Senate, just like our bill on free kill. Again, this year, it was a bill that DeSantis vetoed last year that allows for family members of adult children who don't have children of their own to be able to sue for malpractice if an adult child or family member dies.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I do think it's kind of I get why they're opposed on the prior one, the civil liability bill, because they're worried about anything that defines a child as a human being. But of course, we're well down that road already with the 6-week limit anyway. So and this is again kind of a no-brainer. I'm surprised. You know, it's so clearly it's biblical, it's conceptually valid that if you take away somebody's pregnancy, you know, you're taking away their child. And so whether you caused it intentionally or not, that should be something for which you should be liable. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question. I don't know a lot about this. Literally what I know about is I saw it or I heard it in the news at the top of the hour, 5 o'clock this morning coming in. But I guess we're in Florida. We are working to create, or maybe have created, an alternate certification aside from the bar. I know we're doing this in education generally. We're looking for alternate certifications for or accreditations for our colleges. But I guess the idea is to give us another way to get lawyers approved to operate in the state of Florida other than the ABA. Is that right?
No, this is just simply for the law school aspect, right? You still have to pass the bar exam to become.
Okay.
The bar exam is still the deciding factor. Florida doesn't have reciprocity with any other state. In fact, the Florida Supreme Court smacked down James Uthmeyer a couple weeks ago when James was asking the Supreme Court to let him bring out-of-state lawyers into his office without taking the Florida bar. On the flip side, though, why should we allow the American Bar Association to say what is and is not a satisfactory law school in the state? So it's really just about, you know, would we or should we allow for law schools to be started in Florida to potentially train potential lawyers without the ABA's blessing? I'm perfectly okay with another kind of certifying body, you know, allowing for law schools to exist. My one concern with all of that is the consumer protection aspect. You know, a lot of times we have these kind of fly-by-night schools that get popped up. They make a lot of promises to their students. These students take out a ton of student loan debt, and then they're not prepared to, you know, take the licensing exam, especially not one as difficult as the Florida bar exam, to become lawyers. So there's the consumer protection aspect of allowing more law schools to pop up and be created. But at the same time, the ABA is not the end-all be-all for the existence of law schools, so I was perfectly fine with that change.
You still can't take the bar without a law degree, though. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately,
because I've always thought that maybe that should change. Like, I'm with you on protecting the consumer through some kind of accreditation for the law school that's taking money for claiming to teach you the ability to pass the bar, but I think if somebody wants to study in their basement and at night, they shouldn't have to buy law school. They should be Abraham Lincoln. You know, they should they can go pass the bar, and if they can pass the bar, that's good enough for me.
California is like that, I think, where you don't have to go to law school to sit for the California bar exam. I'd be perfectly fine with that as well. If someone thinks that they're competent and capable of passing the Florida bar exam without going to law school, they should be allowed to go sit for it.
Yeah, and if we don't trust the bar exam to sift through the competent and the incompetent lawyers, then we need a different bar exam. I mean, that to me is the kind of – so I'm glad to hear you say that also. Well, good. It's going to be a very interesting session, obviously, this year. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2 in his last year. Thanks so much for the time, Alex. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.